session number 27045, Reel 10.
Mr. Jacobs, Reel 10. Now, just before we leave the Belfast, did you have any particular friends on board the ship that you could tell us about?
Right.
Characters?
You know. Sal Michael Jones.
What was he like then?
We'd drunk and sotten, really, but he was crafty with it. Nice fella. Last I heard, he was become a policeman down in London somewhere, but I don't know where he was. Ted Reed, he was a nice fella. Never met him. Stradley I met, and I've met him.
What were these people like? What did you look for in a mate? You know, the people you hung around with and drank with.
Oppo.
Yeah, what was an oppo for you?
Soulmate, really. Gypsy Rose Lee, I've been a load of them. One bloke I didn't like, Bingham, bloke from Scotland.
What didn't you like about him?
Because he was a bad-tempered Scotchman, he'd been using his housewife on a mess deck, and he'd left a needle on the table, and I've got it called out with a slice of bread, and I started carrying an alarming with it, and he drew me one off, and they held me back, so I couldn't hit him back, and I've bloody hated him ever since. You would, wouldn't you? I did nothing to him.
Now, would you say it was a happy ship?
Oh, yeah.
What made a happy ship for you? What made the Belfast happy?
Because the blokes would go lucky. Went there, some comics on there, I'll tell you. How about we had can't remember his name, he was a Scouse bloke. He reckoned he was a bloody, good boxer. We had a boxing team. They fought the Yanks once up in Shanghai. And he won his part, and he was always sparring around there. And was throwing his weight about. And I can remember he picked on some young bloke, and he upset him, and he offered him out, and the young bloke took it. So the officer, bloody, ordered a grudge fight, you know, on top deck, on the boat, so official officer in charge, you know. And he turned up with all his kit, boxing gloves, shorts, the lot. This young bloke turned up just in his bloody underpants, I think. Anyway, he bloody did all the bits, you know, shoving up. And this bloke, this bloody, well, every time he come in, just bloody pushed him away. And he tired himself out by doing all the gyrations, you know, jumping around there. And this bloke saved himself because he was flat-footed there and just pushed him away as he come in. And by the time the bloke, you know, there's no rounds in it. They don't have any rounds or knockouts like that. It's still one of them says, I've had enough. And I remember this bloke, he was struggling. He couldn't say he'd had enough, but he really had enough. In the end, he stopped the fight. But he didn't show off after that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good story, but it doesn't quite show why it was a happy ship. Do you know what I mean? Well, why was it a happy ship? What made it a happy ship?
Well, we weren't doing any fighting, were we? It was just a good pleasure cruise, really. Well, I tell you what, a bloke had been in the Navy 20 years, wouldn't have done the service, there's no mileage I'd done at the towns I'm meeting that. I was very lucky
fella. But I mean, you can be on a hell ship like that. I mean, you can be on a cruise and the officers and the petty officers can make
I only dealt with happy people, I suppose, so they're all laugh. Blossom, Nobby Clark.
So the officers and the petty officers were good?
It was all just lads, that's all together.
Now, what happened when
By the way, I did find my boat because my boy had them up there. It's in the car I let him have.
No.
Under the seat.
What happened when you left the ship, then?
Well, I went ashore at HMS Terror and we went into barracks there.
At HMS Terror is the shore station?
Shore base, yeah.
At Hong Kong?
Hong Kong, yeah.
And how long were you there for?
Can't remember. Quite some time, I think.
What, months?
Don't know. Some time. Because we never had paid and we was out of money. And that's when I sold my camera to get a drink. In the unit. Anyway, while I was in there, a young Chinese boy come around and said to me, he says, would I like tea in bed and your boots cleaned? $1 a week. His name was Ali. He had two fingers missing on one hand. And he'd give you tea and clean your boots. He was about 10-year-old, nothing more, 11. And I said, yeah, we'll have some of that, why not? Been around all the others. He sure as well, he'd do, he'd kill your boots and do the... And we was all lit there, we couldn't read Chinese, and we knew we were going to go on a trooper going home, but we didn't know when.
Now, what were you doing during this period?
Nothing. I tell you what, they organised a football match. I wish they hadn't.
Tell us about it.
Somebody said to me, he says, do you want to play in a football match? I said, what's that? He said, well, with the 5th Commandos down at the Happy Valley. So I says, oh. I said, well, I ain't played for ages. I said, put me in the back position so I don't have to run about a bit. So reluctantly, I said, yeah, go on. Yeah, I said, yeah, all right, go on. Anyway, they got in, they give the kit down Happy Valley. It's all built on there. So I remember the airport's down there somewhere. Right through Wanchai, it's from the other side. And these blokes were big. Anyway, this big bloke come flying towards me, and I was going to do one of me flying tackles. And as he bloody hit the ball, I was in midair and hit me full in the face, wallop. I turned a somersault, bump. Cool, I was out of that first kick. Lay there. Anyway, my jaw was, oh, it was terrible. I couldn't eat, and I had to drink through a straw all the time. And it's the last time I've ever played football. Sodding hell. Well, Happy Valley for me. Right, choked.
How did you get?
I did get eventually. And another thing about Ali, he used to take him ashore with me.
This is your Chinese sir?
Yeah, yeah. But till me running ran out, I had some money with me. I used to go and buy for your rabbits. When you could go with Ali, because he could know the lingo and he'd get your bargains. So you go down to Wanchai markets there, and he used to ask me, he says, this stuff, they sell him food in the streets, you know, see. So I says, what's that? He says, very good, you know. So let's have something. Trouble is, every other hour was F. He says, I speak good, effing good English, you know? And I said, what are you going to do? He said, go to England, be a ship steward. I said, no, with that language, you're not. And he was making money, he's keeping his mother and his sister on the money he was making. It was a bloody entrepreneur he was. But I did take him shopping. And, but he was always asking me for money. So I said to him one day, he says, I'll give him some money. I looked around him, and there's blokes in the street, had a box, you know, and they're turning the handle, and he's down there, 10-year-old kid, looking around for the, look, porn he's looking at. Round here, dirty little sod. And he was fine. I just wondered what happened to him, whether he made it or not. He might be one of those Chinese millionaires now.
Now, what about the trip back? You don't know what month it was.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, this is the most embarrassing part of it. We're on a ranchy, and just before we went on ranchy,
what's a ranchy?
That's a P&O ship. It was carrying 4,000 troops coming home, and there was about 50-odd naval personnel, that's all. The rest were Army, Air Force, and whatever. And we were down in the starboard waist somewhere. And I remember the old Sergeant Major in charge of troops come down here and says, you can have detailed upper deck sentries and God knows what. And I said, we ain't having that. See, buddy, he says, called us all up there and they never turned up. He come down appealing to the troops and says, we ain't going to do it. He couldn't do nothing with us anyway. So they more or less did as they said. They had a nappy troop coming home. They'd been doing a show in Kowloon. We'd been able to see it. And they had all the dancing boys, didn't they? And it wasn't long before they found their way down to the Matlow's deck, was it? And they bloody rigged the bingo. Runder took over the bingo, the housey, as they call it, and they used to buy bloody Lasker beer, The Alaska seamen on board used to sell them their beer because they couldn't drink it themselves. So they had their beer and all. And they decided to run an Uckers contest, which is similar to to crossing the line bit, you know? Crossing the line ceremony. But you have King and Queen Uckers. You've got a giant Ludo board, right? All marked out, right? And the dice is for the two buckets, right? And you have King and Queen Uckers, the guards, and everything else. And someone suggested, he says, the king's favourite bunny. So who's going to do that? I looked around, and I was the slimmest one there, and they said, you. So I said, oh, sodding hell. I didn't say, yeah, all right, bit of fun. What I didn't know, they got all this stuff from the bloody theatre plane. Got them on board, and they done me up like a woman in drag. And I wasn't drag, I was good looking. I had all the bloody heels, nylon and socks on, and stockings on, and the lipstick and makeup, wig. And they paraded me in a parade around 4,000 hungry blokes. I got touched up bleeding rotten, I did. Woo! I thought, bloody hell, I'm beginning to like this. Most embarrassing. I wish somebody would take me picture, even I fancy myself.
Anything else about the voyage? Just coming home, weren't you?
Yes, yes.
It was a long voyage.
It was a long voyage, yeah. And we were so naughty, the troops, that we kicked up so much stink and did things wrong, he threatened to put us ashore, Aidan, to find our own way home. So after that, we had to knuckle down. But apart from that, it was a bit of fun, really.
And you don't know what month this was? Or was it spring or summer?
Yeah, it was. I came out there about April. I finished with the Navy, 47.
So you'd be coming back in. So what happened when you got back to England?
Well, you just go to barracks and you wait for anything. Funny enough, you get meet up. I was lucky, I got in a barracks round there, and I...
Which barracks?
Portsmouth Barracks, that's my home base, 5385.
HMS Victory?
Yeah, Victory. And I got a job in the drafting office, and I could make my own self a chit to buddy... get front of the nappy queue.
So that was roughly March to April, 47.
Yeah. And I met some of the blokes I buddy who joined up with. And, yeah, we are.
Now, what about your demo? What was your... was the demobilisation done?
Well, it wasn't much at all, was it? You could still give you a medical, but it ain't much of a medical anyway. And, they did find out I was, had something wrong with me, my stomach. And I went into the HMS Asler in Fareham. And that was...
When was this? When you were being demobilised?
Yeah, yeah. I was in there about a week. And I developed... When the doctor came round one day, he said, any complaints? I said, yeah, I've developed a pile. He says, oh, we'll send you to the rectum clinic. So I thought, oh, lovely. Well, like anything else, I said to you, when you have anything done in the medical, it's still in your face. You don't hide behind screens. It's in your face. You let you know what you're aimed for. And I go to this place, and just behind a screen in the same room, and it's this Norwegian Matlow. And he's having something wrong with his rectum as well. So I'm sitting down there with my trousers off, waiting for my turn. I'm looking through the crack in the screen. And I see him with his backside cocked up in the air. And then I see this doctor. He's got a thing like an icing bloody syringe with a big wheel on it. And he gets behind this bloke and he shoves it right up his backseat. And this bloke's going, ooh, I thought it's my turn next. My backside's going to look like that, you know? I thought, you're next. And then when he gets it in there, he starts twisting it. The whole thing's opening like that. Ooh, mine started closing and all. I thought, but he's moaning like buggery. And I heard him say, well, sorry to say, you've got a fissure. Because he takes the middle out and it's all got glass inside, so I turned to George. That's how big it is, you could see right in. And then he says to me, you're next. So you get on the bed and you get your backside crossed up there. He said, well, you've got a pile there, sentinel pile. He says, what do you want me to do with it? Shall I inject it or shall I cut it out? I said, what's the difference? He says, well, if I cut it out, you won't get it back again. If I inject it, it might do. So I said, yeah, all right. He says, well, I'm going to inject it now. Injects it and he comes back one. He says, can you feel that? No. So he says, right. He starts cutting away. And do you know you can hear it cutting? It's like a gnawing at you. You know, you feel it through your body. You know that's some of your flesh coming off there. And then he barely sort of stitches it up or does something. Then he gets a big 6-inch bandage. It's tight and a knot round your waist. Then he ties a bit of a 6-inch bandage in the back there. So it comes in and splits it. So it comes through to two legs. You open the side, you watch it. And then ties it up the front. But before he does that, he gets a big pad of cotton wool. Goes, boom. Right, light duty. I staggered out of there. Gets back to the wall. And it starts throbbing. Oh. It's like a toothache, but like 10 times worse. And I'm groaning on her bed. And I felt as if I was giving birth. She said to me, she says, the old sister says, what's up? I said, just had a pile done. She says, oh, you poor sod. So I says, I can't give you nothing. You'd have to go through it. It's take its course. It won't last more than 2 hours. She was right, but I mean, a bit sore after that.
Now, what about your final demobilisation? How was that done? What happened? What did you get?
You get soaked and all of that. Yeah, it wasn't bad stuff, really. You get your money and that's it. You're finished.
Now, what were you going to do when you came out? You come out because you wanted to go back to your apprentice as a bookbinder.
Yeah, I did.
Is that what you did?
Yes. I was come out and I had a job ready to go to. And funny enough, when I continued my apprenticeship, I got full money. Because by that time, I would have been full money anyway.
And it was the bookbinding you did?
Yeah. Went back to Nevitz. And the government made my money up to journeyman's money, which would have been had I not gone in the Navy. I had to go in the office and sign papers. So I went in as a boy, getting on boys' money, in fact, £32 a week at 18. And I come back on about 4.5 quid a week, because that's all the money was then. In fact, that was good money then.
And what was your career in? We don't really do that, but we'd just like to see you settled into it. What did you work as? What was your work career as? Was it as a bookbinder or in...
Well, actually, if you think about it, my bookbinding was more sand binding. I left Nevitz when I got married, and I went to live at Campbell's Park. And I thought, well, I don't like the travelling. And Watford was known as a print town. Plenty of jobs to go to, so I got a job in Oddams doing bookbinding. But while I was in there, the bindery closed down and I got on a magazine side.
What house? As a printer?
No. Magazine side, OHT, what they use now. They turned over to litho instead of having gravure, they got litho and they put them on a have a stitch and trim. See, when I've cut in. All these magazines are done the same way now. All these Bakshi magazines. They're done litho. Not litho, that's it, yeah. And
that was your career. Now, yeah. Had the war affected you, you know, your naval service affected you in any way, good or bad? Physically or mentally? What had it done for you?
Made me outgoing. Widened me horizons. It improved my loyalties to my class. And I've been a performer all my life. I had a trade union career. Did more soapboxing than that.
Any bad side? Any bad side mentally or physically?
No. Never had any unemployment until I got made redundant. 57.
No, I mean, from your naval career, it didn't have any bad effects on you?
No. I joined the RNA, and I'm a life member of that. An active member I was. Wherever I go in, I'm an active member.
So what did you do with the RNA, just to finish up with?
Well, I served on two committees, a club committee. When Watford branched, I was an original member. We started it down to Sea Cadets, and I wore two hats ever since. Fundraised for them, served on the social committee, the branch committee. Come forward with suggestions, more or less got them at their own premises up at Leavesden, where I made the initial effort. And when they got the offer, they didn't want to move from West Watford there and come up here. But we gave one of my passion speeches and waved me tie up and said, if you don't bloody come up there, all this goes out the window. Because we don't function anymore. And they bloody went up there, got their own premises, and made a hell of a lot of money. But if I tell you there, oh well, we did make a lot of money. And
are you still a member?
Yeah, I'm still a member. I'm a life member. And
is it important to you?
Oh, yeah. I'm still a member of it. I've got all my things up there.
Okay, thank you very much.